Keeping both the baby and the bathwater, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that knows all podcast lives matter. And now, did he fire six shots or only five? It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Here we are again, ladies and gentlemen, Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. It's another beautiful morning in Southern Arizona, and it's time for us to talk Medicare as we do three times a week. And we've been doing that for almost 2.5 years now, and it's worked out pretty well for us. So we're going to continue as long as you continue to listen once in a while. So we appreciate your joining us today. I am Doug Jones. As you might have heard my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, announce, I am the Medicare expert for today and for maybe the rest of the week, if I'm allowed to continue on in my present job. I'm here because I wrote a book called Medicare for the Lazy Man. 2022 is the most recent edition. It's got green numbers on the cover. And when you go to Amazon.com or when you go to BarnesandNoble.com, you can put Medicare for the Lazy Man 2022 into your search blank, your search area, your search window, I guess it is. And you will find that there are several editions of the book, and you can, especially at Amazon, you can choose the one that you think is going to fit your need the best. You can have a hardcover, you can have a soft cover, you can have a Kindle version, or you can have an Audible version. I aim to please, and that is why we have four different types of books available for you to purchase. If you're going to give gifts to people, let's say you've got somebody with a birthday coming up and they're approaching Medicare age, I would say go ahead and splurge for the hardcover book, and that way it will be placed on the shelf in their library for future generations to pull down and learn about what used to occur in Medicare, because I don't know if it's going to be around forever, but it's going to be around for the rest of my life, so I'm happy to make a permanent contribution to somebody's library. On the other hand, it may be that the Kindle version at $3.80 is the choice for you. It's cost-effective, and it is immediately available, and it will be as equally as instructive. Now, often we listen to our 30-second radio spot that Randy and I crafted a couple of years ago, and it is kind of nostalgic for some listeners to hear what I sounded like 2 years ago, but more importantly, to be given the list of ways in which one might tap into the knowledge that we try to convey about Medicare. So I'm going to be real quiet now, and Randy's going to probably play that, and then I'll come back and I'll yak some more. Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your jumping on that with both feet. And in fact, why don't you jump on the podcast with both feet? How are you doing today, Randy?
I'm good. I'm good.
I'm good here.
I see that you've got your Bailey Rail Yard shirt on. I sure don't have one, but what have I got? I've got a
One Mountain. Is it one? One Mountain.
It's a Stone Mountain.
Oh, Stone Mountain. Oh, in Georgia. Okay. Yeah. With the Confederate
heroes. This is very not woke.
No, there are no no pictures of the actual faces on Stone Mountain.
No, they're trying to get Stone Mountain to, you know, whittle it off of the mountain or something.
Are I they mean, really? No. I thought yeah. I didn't even think they would try that. I thought that's such a Southern icon. Icon, is that the right word? It's like a religious institution to go to Stone Mountain and look up at the whose faces are on Stone Mountain.
Well, let's see. I think who was the leader of the Confederate Army?
Lee. Well, Robert Lee.
Yeah, Lee was Lee's on there. There's a bunch of other folks that are very tightly associated with the Confederacy.
Well, let me ask did Jefferson Davis make the cut or not?
I think he's on there. Yeah.
Okay, and then Stonewall Jackson, Thomas Jackson.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of who else might be. There are a few hugely successful Confederate generals that even the Confederates are kind of a little queasy about their tactics in war. And so they're not likely to have too many statues to be torn down by the 21st century woke mob. But that's a subject for another time, I guess.
Well, you know, I just took a note. Okay. I'm going to leave Stone Mountain as a hanging chad. Excellent. And I will get a list of all the folks that are living on Stone Mountain, because I was I'm not a Southerner, but I was very impressed when I went to see it, because it's a really, really notable monument.
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to see it myself sometime. Driven through Georgia a million times, never actually seen Stone Mountain, but it's a place of some religious significance to the Confederacy and to current day Southerners. And so I definitely want to support that effort. And I want you to tell me about it when you finally get a chance to see it. Or did you?
I got the T-shirt. I was there. I was there with some very, very, very Southern friends of ours. That they used to live in Georgia, and now they live in Florida, but they are so tightly tied to the South. You can't tell the difference between them and anybody else down there.
Well, you know, that's the way my family started. I think our first English relative ancestor came to Virginia in 1640, something like that. And he started a whole line of Joneses and predecessors to Joneses, different family names. But I'm related to the Custis family and the Lee family, among others, Taillefer and other famous Southern names. But what they did was they'd have a million kids, divide up the big plantation into smaller amounts. And eventually some of the kids, probably the younger kids, would have to head west where they could claim new land. And eventually, my grandmother was born in, so far west, it was almost the edge of the earth. It was she was born in not Dallas, but Fort Worth, Texas. And then her father, who was a newspaper publisher, wound up publishing a newspaper in Illinois. And so she went to college in Illinois, met my grandfather, her husband, and my mother was born in Illinois, and I was born in Illinois. How did that happen? No, I was born in Oklahoma City, but we moved back to Illinois because my grandfather had a business here. So my family left the South at some point, but I still feel tight kinship with Southerners. And
you know, the other thing that I was going to mention here real quick, like we've got a couple minutes before we have to go to work on Medicare, but I didn't realize until these friends of ours, who shall remain nameless at this point, but his base of operations for his entire family was Maryland. And I didn't realize that Maryland, I mean, I was not a big historian, but no. I didn't realize that Maryland was so tightly associated with the South.
Yes, Maryland was bordered Washington, D.C., and it was one of the first states to be threatened into submission by the North when the war began. The war actually began when Southerners tried to throw Northern military units out of the Confederate states. And it started with the bombardment of Fort Sumter in Charleston, South Carolina. And so all the Southern states took up arms against the Northern troops that were stationed in them. But Maryland was a completely Southern state, but the North was so close and so powerful that they were considered a border state and forced into neutrality, along with Kentucky and, I believe, let's see, Missouri, I think. And then, of course, Virginia was a totally different shape at the beginning of the Civil War. And in 1863, West Virginia split off from Virginia, and they were primarily Union sympathizers. And they would have. So all these border states were where a lot of the clashes occurred. But the North had such a preponderance of force that Maryland was just subdued right away. They never really
The other interesting thing that I've learned about Maryland because of these friends of ours, but this fellow that we know, a great friend, great individual, great man, great, and his wife is just wonderful. He is the end of the line in terms of a particular family who has inherited a plantation in Maryland over the course of the years.
Yep.
He still owns the plantation, although I don't know whether they lease it out or what they're doing, but it's got an old plant. It's got a really, really fabulous plantation residence that one of his aunts lived in till she didn't need it anymore. But it's just a great. And I know there's a lot of downside to this story, but from a historical standpoint, it's just wonderful to sit and to listen to him.
Well, I didn't have that opportunity to listen to any old family members of mine that had lived on plantations, but I went with my grandparents in 1960 to D.C. And during that trip, I got to visit a couple of senators, Margaret Chase Smith and somebody else, Everett Dirksen. And I got to see a lot of interesting things. And my grandfather was a very influential guy. So I got the inside scoop on a lot of things that maybe your average tourist in Washington, D.C. wouldn't have had. But one of the things we did was we went south into Virginia from D.C. for a couple of days and went to, I think, Fredericksburg, maybe. And outside of that town was a plantation that had been in my grandmother's family. We talked to the owners of that plantation. We went up to the plantation house and we drove by all the slave quarters. And there were other outbuildings, too. And so it had all of the buildings preserved, but not in a museum quality. It was kind of run down. And my grandfather gave serious thought to buying it. And I don't know what happened with the transaction, but we got to sit there and listen to the owners of the place talk about what their knowledge of the history was. And a lot of it didn't stick with me. I was 12 years old and I didn't anticipate the level of interest that I would have in Southern history and civilization. So I probably should have paid more attention, but I didn't. But it was the same kind of thing. I could have had a plantation in my family portfolio of properties. And I
absolutely
it didn't happen.
And the other thing I'll tell you about this fellow, good friend of ours, I won't bore you with the gory details, but he's also the owner of a, I don't know how to describe that, a crabbing license around Maryland. What's the big area of water around Maryland?
Chesapeake Bay.
Chesapeake Bay. Okay. So he is the owner of a crabbing license, which gets passed down from father to son to father to son to father to son.
Right.
In a crabbing license in the Chesapeake Bay. He still owns it. He still has people working for him and he's still making big bucks off of these crabs.
No kidding. Wow. Well, good for him. I'm not a big crab fan, but I will tell you that if you read the Michener book, entitled Chesapeake, they talk a lot about what goes on or what, you know, the history of the Maryland area was all about. And one of the things that guys used to do that didn't have crab licenses was they'd go out in rowboats with these cannons on the front of them. There'd be one cannon sticking out of the front of your rowboat, and you'd have a couple of buddies with you. And what you would do is when you saw a flock of ducks, you would fire this cannon and then go pick up all the ducks that fell out of the sky because you were using beads, you know, it was grape shot instead of a one big projectile. And that was finally outlawed because I think all the ducks were starting to go extinct. So that was a favorite sport back in the day of Maryland, Chesapeake Bay boaters.
Well, crabbing, it's a huge story. I'll tell you sometime, but it's a very interesting, huge story. But long story short is he's the descendant now that owns that crab license.
Yeah.
And he paid his way through college with crabbing.
Excellent. Excellent. I assume he has guys to go out and get the crabs. He doesn't do that himself or.
No, he gets somebody else to go pick them, you know, run the pots or whatever they call it. Yeah. But when he was a kid in college, he did all that.
Wow. By the way, I wanted to tell you that there's all kinds of turmoil going on just from historical perspective with Elon Musk purchasing Twitter. And I was sent a message today, especially just for me, from the news people at the Babylon Bee. And they have a list of jobs that maybe some of these former Twitter employees might be qualified for, might be interested in pursuing. And I thought maybe a few of these jobs I should mention just in case they haven't thought about going after them. One of them is White House press secretary. Another suggestion is a person who dresses up as the Easter Bunny to secretly run the country. Or, you know, some of those Twitter employees were probably a little heavy handed on the punishment of account holders. And so they're also suggesting North Korean general that some of them would be junior pronoun enforcer at your local middle school, at your local junior high, I would call it. Cashier for the CNN Plus going out of business extravaganza.
Oh, I love that one. Oh, that's good.
Chief of staff to the vice president, but be aware that that's a very temporary position. It says one opportunity is clown. Be the bozo you were born to be. But the one I like best is the Tesla parking attendant at the Twitter headquarters. Because the new Twitter overlord is most merciful.
Oh, gosh, those are great. I love them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're going to love this because I have news about Medicare disadvantage. We've been talking for a long time about how Medicare Advantage plans that we call Medicare disadvantage plans are imposing an inordinate drain on the Treasury because in its infinite wisdom, the government has allowed them to siphon funds from the Medicare Trust Fund to cover the increased risk that some of the Medicare participants that Medicare Advantage plans cover represent. In other words, some people are sicker than others. And when they sign up a bunch of people, the government just gives them money every month for each participant in the Medicare Advantage plan. But some of them are sicker than normal. And so the Medicare Advantage plan, when they discover that, goes to the federal government and says, hey, pay us extra. These people are sicker. They're going to cost us more to take care of. And we don't want to run short of money. We don't want to have a budget constraint that will cause us not to give these people very good care that you want us to give to them. So the government rolls over and gives them extra money. Well, what do the plans do then? The plans figure out a way to lie to the government about the diagnoses that some of their participants have so they can get even more money from the government. And this has resulted in billions of dollars siphoned from the Treasury going into the pockets of these plan holders, because in many cases, they are lying about the diagnoses that they're trying to get extra money from the government for. So I just found an article that it's a week old. I wish I'd seen it before. It's entitled Members of Congress Send a Letter to CMS. That's the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Pardon me for not talking about how they cannot spell their own acronym properly, but members of Congress have sent a letter urging the agency to address Medicare Advantage overpayments. And I think this is the first step in what's probably going to be a very lengthy process that hopefully will drop the hammer on these dishonest, fraudulent plans and their theft and corruption that is resulting in a huge, huge drain of finances that should be funding the Medicare trust fund. So just to finish this article out, April 20th, 2022, 19 members of the House and Senate sent a letter to CMS. Chiquita Brooks LeSure, I never even heard the name of the CMS administrator. Obviously, that person became the administrator when the Democrats won the presidential election. So Chiquita Brooks LeSure received this letter from 19 members of the House and the Senate, highlighting concerns about overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans that line the pockets of big insurance companies. Starting to sound a little lefty, isn't it? Starting to sound more like the Russians might order their lackeys in the United States to uh, complain about something. They don't like private enterprise. Randy and I love private enterprise, so I'm not sure I would agree with that particular wording. Anyway, so going on with the news about this letter, I'm skipping the names of the politicians who signed the letter. I'll get back to that in a minute. They're calling on CMS to address overpayments and increase transparency in the Medicare Advantage program. The letter urges CMS to mitigate the announced payment increases so they are on a par with payments to traditional Medicare. And it also calls on CMS to increase transparency in the Medicare Advantage program, raising concerns about the impact of Medicare Advantage overpayments on the Medicare Part A trust fund. The letter states, instead of failing to curb overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans for 2023, we encourage CMS to recoup those overpayments and reduce them over time to extend the life of the Medicare Part A trust fund to ensure parity in payment between Medicare Advantage and fee-for-service Medicare, and to improve and equalize benefits for all Medicare beneficiaries. Noting that Medicare Advantage has failed to achieve savings in any year since its inception, the letter states that taxpayers and traditional Medicare beneficiaries are subsidizing the surplus profits of Medicare Advantage plans. Further, Medicare Advantage plans frequently deny costly treatment options and require burdensome pre-authorization requirements that prevent beneficiaries from getting the care they need. And these impediments to timely, high-quality care lead many patients with complicated conditions to disenroll from Medicare Advantage plans. Now, Randy and I have been harping on this for a long time, and I'm glad to see this letter because it is the first solid evidence that people in Congress are recognizing that Medicare Advantage plans are not advantageous to anyone. And I'm glad to see them putting the arm on the CMS in order to rein in some of the fraudulent activity so that eventually we're going to see an equal treatment between the plans that Randy and I recommend, which are Medicare supplement plans. And why do we recommend them? Because they offer all the freedom of choice one could ever want. You're not tied to a network of doctors and hospitals that might be inadequate for your needs. You're not forced to seek permission to go see a specialist. You're not promised all of these things that are really not going to come to pass if you accidentally get signed up for a Medicare Advantage plan. So there are many reasons why this is really, really good news. It's the beginning of probably a long, hard-fought battle that will hopefully result in Medicare supplement plans being treated with an equal level of support in Congress. Now, the one thing that gives me a little bit pause here is the fact that every one of these 19 people who signed the letter is on the opposite side of the political aisle from me. And many are names of people that I wouldn't give the time of day to if they approached me and held out their hand asking for campaign donations. So it's interesting that the enemy of my enemy is becoming my friend. They're never going to be my friends, but at least for once, I'm fighting on the same side as people that I would consider to be the political opponents that I normally rail about in my private life. So that was the interesting little twist in this article that I thought you might find interesting, Randy. Every one of these people is somebody that you and I would be unlikely to vote for if we were given the opportunity.
I think that was a very, very apropos way of describing this situation, Doug. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. But there was one other thing you said that just shocked me.
What was that?
You said that since its inception, the Medicare Advantage system has never shown a savings. Oh, gosh, I'm shocked.
I have to tell you that I read that because I assumed that when it was first created, it would have done what it was intended to do. It took a couple of years for the crooks to pervert it. And so I thought maybe even in its earliest years, it might have been a money saver. But according to the people that wrote this letter or the article here, no, that's not true at all.
I don't know why they didn't call the Medicare Advantage system Pork Barrel RU.
Yeah, they did have a different name for it when it was brand new. It was Medicare Plus or Medicare something or other, and then it became Medicare Advantage after that. They keep trying to put lipstick on a pig. And frankly, people who love freedom and a solid fiscal policy for the U.S. government, they should not do anything to support Medicare Advantage, because it's just a drain on the government finances that otherwise support Medicare, which everybody seems to love. So I'm hoping this leads to more respect.
I really hope it does. Obviously I'm a skeptic, and about, you know, I lived close to Missouri, so I'm kind of one of these guys of a Missouri show me sort of a guy. But anyway, long story short, I do think it's a great start. Because Medicare, I mean, there's nothing, absolutely nothing good about Medicare Advantage.
Well, it's an opportunity for people to steal, rob, and, fraudulently acquire money that should not be theirs. On the other hand, it doesn't do any good for the patients involved. And except there are a few who will say, you know, I enjoy my plan. Well, are you sick? Do you happen to use it? No, I never have to use it. I never go see a doctor. I'm fine with it. So those are the people that really enjoy Medicare Advantage plans, the people who haven't used the plan benefits yet. The people who get sick and need to use benefits, that's where they find the roadblocks and the frustrations.
Yep, I get it. Well, you know, we have burned up our time today again.
That happened so fast.
We need to cancel our tickets and bring her into the port. You know, we can't go any further than we've already gone. But I got a couple things. I think we touched on them in the beginning, but send Doug email. Doug waits every day with bated breath, with a smile on his face, down by the mailbox at the studios, looking for mail. But sometimes he's disappointed. So send him some mail, dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Buy his paperback on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Get an audio, get a Kindle, do something. Because right now, Doug is standing up on the porch of his Fortress of Solitude in Cave Creek, Arizona, with binoculars, just waiting for someone to show up and buy a book.
Okay, well, the last guy that showed up was my neighbor, who was waving a tool at me through the window. So
it looked like looked like a very precise tool, too.
Yes, it's surgically prepared. a completely weird, off-the-wall thing that looks like he made it himself, really.
Yeah, it does. It really does. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, and now the guy who has a tool that is supposed to make fixing his misting system almost automatic.
I'll report in on a future episode. Bye-bye.